Welcome to All Things in the Name of Love. If you like this show, please like, subscribe, and share. Thanks. Welcome to another episode of All Things in the Name of Love. Today I have with me a beautiful soul sister that we've been trying to connect with for a few months, Kara Goodwin. Among other things, she is a meditation and spiritual transformation coach. And what I loved in your little tagline was instilling calm through meditation, and that you're a beekeeper. Because we have to have a discussion about bees during this, because I've had magical experiences with them.
Oh, they're amazing.
So first I want to ask, like, how did you come into this state of going within much more deeply?
You know, I think my journey, there are a lot of mirrors to your journey, you know, of how it seems that through kind of challenges and trauma that is happening around you, you had a bigger perspective on life than you did before. And I had a very similar experience in terms of very, you know, corporate, mainstream person, public school, big five company, you know, and then my personal world just crumbled, and there were a series of deaths and major, major surgeries, in my close family. So that all happened within a series of, 7 months. So it was my sister-in-law passed away. Our dog passed away like 3 weeks later. My stepdad had a brainstem surgery. My mother-in-law was hit by a motorbike while she crossed the road.
Wow.
And then my stepmom ended up in the ICU with a failing heart and had a heart transplant.
Wow.
And all of that, that's just my immediate family and my in-laws. We also had one of our best friends who was a groomsman in our wedding was diagnosed with a brain tumor in that time too. So it just seemed like everywhere I turned was just it was like the sky was falling, you know, everything that I thought was stable was at risk. And, that really threw me for a loop. And so I found meditation. I really had felt called to meditation for a long time, but it was one of those things that I thought, oh, everybody can do this. So I'll just sit down and meditate. And then I very quickly it was like, oh, my thoughts are just firing off. And this is, I'm just sitting here like with racing thoughts. So I would stop doing it because I knew I wasn't meditating and I wasn't getting anything from it. And I was super busy. So I was like, I don't have time to just dedicate time to sit here and let my thoughts run away with me. And so I had felt drawn to meditation, but I had never developed a practice. And when all of this was happening, I really felt like, okay, there's something to this meditation thing. This is the time that I really need to explore it. And so that was when I started using meditation just to feel calm, just to be able to get control of my nervous system, even though I didn't know that's what I was doing.
Right, right.
Just to get rooted in something that wasn't, that felt more solid than, this world that was changing around me so fast. So I came to meditation from a very secular place, even though funnily enough, I was learning from monks of a certain tradition, from more of a yogic tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were spiritual, but they also were trying to bridge the world. So you could approach it from a more secular perspective. And that was really what I was doing. I was sort of rejecting or holding arm's distance all of the God stuff. And really just wanting to physiologically there are cause and effect things that we can do. And that's what I was interested in.
Okay.
And then over time, spirituality has been, connecting with God and feeling that divinity within me and activating more of that divinity has been really the thing that keeps me going. That's the main part of my meditation now. And then the calmness is that low-hanging fruit that's like, oh, as I dedicate myself to being an instrument of the divine, the calmness is just there. So you talking about kind of the tagline of like instilling calm, that is something that I understand as being very important just for people to feel more like people, less like bots or whatever, you know, however we feel these days. But it really has become this byproduct. And it's one of those things, and I imagine you are the same, where people, when they're in our field, will notice that they feel calmer. I get told this all the time by people who, well, by all kinds of people, but specifically people who don't have a meditation practice, who aren't trying to work on themselves, who are still keeping that aspect of themselves well hidden. And then we interact and they're like, oh my God, I feel so much calmer. And they're not, you know, it's just one of those things that's like in the field now, you know?
Right.
So that's kind of my beginning.
One of the ways it shows up for me is people, strangers, will come up and tell me their life story.
Yeah.
I'm like, thank you. I don't.
Yes.
So my journey has been like, okay, holding space for that and seeing the differentiation between holding space and people pleasing.
Ooh, I like that. Yeah. I mean, and let me add this element too, because one thing that comes up time and time again is that I'm a secret keeper. And this, my mentor had told me this, like he realized that he was like, oh, you're like this, like you, he calls me the secret keeper. And that's, there's a lot more to that in terms of just like, but he recognizes that people do want to tell me things, and I'm surprised a lot of times by how deep they'll go so fast. But it's come up in my gene keys. It's come up in galactic readings I've had. It's come up, it comes up over and over in all these different facets of secret keeping and being entrusted with secrets and things like that. And it's, so I wonder if there's an element of that too with you.
It probably
is. It seems clear that there is.
Yeah, because I've had one of the weirdest ones was I was in Moosehead Lake, Maine, looking to get waxed, like how to upgrade my cross-country skis. Like that was the purpose I came into the store for. An hour and a half later, I still didn't get the response to my question because he was too busy talking about his grandfather being a founding member of the town. And my former partner was like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I don't know, help.
Yeah. Don't need all the secrets. Just wax my skis.
It was really funny because I hadn't had that strong of a wow. Okay. He has never said any of this to anyone. And for some reason, my presence just opened the vault.
Yes. Isn't it funny too how little we have to say? Because I will get like, oh my God, I feel so much better. And I'm like, I have said two words. You know, like, I've hardly said anything and they feel so much better. It's really funny.
It's really beautiful. I mean, I've had people come up to Walmart and just like, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, thanks for sharing your story.
That's funny. Well, I love how you put the boundary part into it too, because that is important. You know, if we don't feel that it's being, we feel stepped upon, that's important.
It's a practice. It's a daily practice because I love stories. I mean, otherwise I wouldn't have a podcast.
Right.
And then there's that like, oh yeah, now it's not good for me.
Yeah.
And the graceful exit, and it's a work in process. Progress.
Yes.
Rather. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree.
So, I keep hearing bees, 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 bees. So, I want to share something about bees that I had a few years ago. I was living on a farm and they just got a beehive. And they went to Columbia and I was in charge of the farm for a month, which is way out of my wheelhouse, but I did it anyways. And they had two queen bees and they'd both died. And so I picked up the third one, and the beekeeper that was helping the farm owner was going to help me put her in, like teach me how to put her in. And so, but there was like a lag between me getting the bee and her coming over. So I put her on my altar with gems and like that energy. And she was there for like 3 hours. And then we put her in the little cage and we let her out 5 days later. And she literally strutted into the hive like she owned it. And the beekeeper was like, I have never seen a bee like just own a hive like that. And I'm like, that's so maybe I don't know if my altar had anything to do with it. But then I was guided to play a nun's from I think the 14th century. Her name is Hildegard, and I played the music that she wrote to the bees. And I would walk in there and I'd cry if I saw somebody died. And I mean, the connection was so profound. And ever since I was little, I've always said I love bees and trees. Those are the two things that like mean the most to me, because we can't eat without bees and we can't breathe without trees. And so to have that experience, it wasn't a big experience, but the honey, oh my gosh, the honey that year, I have never taken, like, it is sacred honey. I mean, all honey is sacred, but this is like a higher, like, it doesn't even taste good. It's like something from the cosmos level of honey.
Oh, I love that. I don't actually collect honey anymore, and I only collected it for 1 year, which was the second year that I had bees because it takes some time for them to have enough. But I got that all the time because I did sell the honey, and everybody was like, "Where I want more. That is different honey. That I've never tasted honey like that." And I'm like, I don't take it anymore, but it meant a lot to me that it meant so much to everybody. But I, bees are special and sacred, and you may be interested in the book. Oh, what is it called? A bee. It's channeled. It's like a, it's
Oh, wow.
Jacqueline Freeman, I want to say is her name. And she channels bees. She is a beekeeper and she gives all this mystical insight.
That's
So
amazing.
she, believes that the bees were like coming in and sharing this intel, and they were sharing like even how they see. So they see, they've got the, like that they see with their third eye basically, and they can see geometric patterns on flowers that need to be pollinated versus the flowers that have already been pollinated, and they are, in constant communication, and the importance of light and dark, and the queen, because the queen hardly ever leaves the hive, only to mate, and only once in her lifetime, and the so she's in the dark all the rest of the time, and what it means to be out in the light. Through that author and another woman who co-wrote another book, which is more around like a bee-centric approach to beekeeping, I actually stopped doing my conventional beekeeping the way that I had been trained to do it. And I adopted their method, which is really like you create the hive so that it's more like what it's like in the wild. And that means no right degree, right angle corners. It's insulated. You don't go into the hive and manipulate the frames. They
Awesome.
you allow them to design the hive because they've got all this intelligence with the currents, the air currents that come in. And so it's once I got that set up, it was a lot to get it set up that way. But I take that approach. So I still have, I only have one hive now. I used to have two. One hive found its way into my converted hive boxes, and one remains unoccupied. But it's very, I just go and I spend time with them and I mow because the where I have my bees, the lawn care people won't mow around the hive. So I take care of the lawn and I just sit there and I observe and I smell them because they smell amazing. I believe there's so much medicine, for lack of a better word, just even when you're inhaling what they're producing. I do miss kind of that interaction of, you know, when you are bringing the frames, when you have frames and you open the box, there is something about them crawling and seeing the nursery and seeing like the honey that they're making and everything. But when you do think of what the hive is actually like in the wild, they are in darkness. I mean, it's kind of like every time you open the hive, you're opening the being, the apian being. It's like you're doing surgery just haphazardly because they've done all this work to use their propolis to close off the drafts, and you're breaking those seals every time you're going in and you're manipulate. I mean, I've watched when I was a conventional beekeeper, I would watch bees being born from, you know, emerging from their, what would you call it? Like from the egg, the, that's not the right term, but, and it was so beautiful.
Yeah.
And I love that. But then you also think like they, nature makes it so that they do that in darkness. Mm-hmm. They do that undisturbed. So it, really, as I learned more and kind of evolved my thinking about it, I really changed my approach. And as such, I don't take the honey anymore. It is so sacred, and it's such a, and it's so important for them. So with conventional beekeeping, you should leave, and you should leave some honey so that they can still have it, but you're taking a lot of it and you're replacing it with sugar water.
Yeah.
And that's like taking mother's milk from a baby and giving them a candy bar.
Okay.
And thinking that, oh, okay, well, they got the calories. So, but you're taking this elixir that is really like chemically designed to be perfect medicine and nourishment for them. And so I stopped taking the honey, and I still do have a little bit of honey from when I used to take the honey. And I just, you know, if I use it at all, it's as like, it's like as a sacrament, you know, it's like, it, you know, I don't just throw it in hot water or tea or whatever. It's like, oh, this is like, you know, I'll have a little bit because it is kind of magical for us too. But we can really overdo it just with our, like, you know, the more the merrier and the more the better. And, you know, it, and thinking of like how good it is for us rather than, you know, it's that animal husbandry. It's the same, same concept as, you know, free range chickens versus just, you know, they don't, their feet never touch the ground, type of thing. So it was a big mentality shift.
Yeah.
The book, I can't remember. I still can't remember the song that it's got song in it is The Song of Increase. That was the book I was talking about, the first book. And then there's another one that she co-authored, and I've had both of them on my podcast. And that was really the one that changed my perception. And that one is like, I want to say it's, maybe it's called bee-centric beekeeping. I can't remember, but it really is like, think of the bee and apply your practice to the health and well-being of the bee. And not just like one single bee, but like a bee is an ape. It's part of a bigger being, you know, like a bee is like every individual bee that you see is actually part of a bigger animal that is like an apian being. And so it's like, how do we practice and respect and revere the bee and the life of the bee and the sanctity of the bee while still wanting to be a beekeeper? And so it, again, it becomes very hands-off, which is, a blessing. And, you know, also like, wow, it is nice to really interact with them, but it just, what's the point here? Is it what I want? Whether it's honey or whether it's to like see baby bees being born, is that what's important, or is it having more bees and having happy and healthy bees in our environment?
I love that shift because it comes in, what I've seen with my body talk animals is that there's a shift in consciousness with the animals, and they want to have that relationship of being, having stewards as opposed to being emotional support.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Having stewards. Yes. That gives me so many chills.
So like as an example, like I want to pick up the cat. Well, what if the cat doesn't want to be picked up?
Yeah.
It's like,
okay, all right, all
but
right,
no, I get,
Sophia.
but I get it. I
No,
get it. I get it.
but you're talking to me. You don't realize you're talking to me, but you are because my one of my kid, well, both my cats, but I have like this my baby. Her name is Aristotle. That's a whole other story. But we thought she was a boy, and that was the name she came with, and then it was too late by the time, and I love that name. So anyway, but she loves to sit by me. She
Okay.
loves to sit by me. And every now and then I'm like, I'm gonna cuddle you. And I'll pick her up and I'm like, you like it, you like it.
Right.
And she's tolerating it, but she's like, and it's like she's counting down. Okay, I'm gonna give her 20 seconds. You can have 20 seconds, Kara. And then she starts like fighting her way, and I'll let her go. But I'm always like, no, you like it. Look, you like it. Look, it's so cozy. You like cuddling.
I get it, because I grew up with cats, and I'd be like, okay, cat, I'm picking you up. And like, I don't know, something shifted, because I lived with a Maine Coon cat a couple years ago, and he was like, no, I'm going to come up to you when I want to be pet. I'll sleep next to you right here. 3 o'clock in the morning, it was so awesome to have fur in my face. But it was like, he was the one that was in charge. Not saying that he was dominating me, but he was telling me when he wanted attention or food, or like, it was his show. It wasn't mine. I wasn't dictating him. And it really shifted my perspective of like, oh, wow. Okay. So we have this perception that because we're the owners, which nobody is owning anyone else, that's why you're the human with the cats. You're not the owner of the cats. We get to shift into deeper awareness of how we're showing up for them. Because they want to support us, but they've been supporting us in this role of like pretty much codependency. And they're like, yeah, I kind of want to ascend with you guys. And in order to ascend, we have to be sovereign too, but not in the way that you're sovereign, because we still need you to feed us and to take care of us, but for you to honor our relationship with you more. And instead of imposing our needs on them, recognizing like I've been blessed with I had a session with my mentor about 6 months ago, and I stayed over at a friend's house. And I was specifically guided to stay at that house because the cat was there to bring through a transmission for me. She didn't sleep with me. She didn't do anything. She was just like holding space for me while I was like bringing in energy from Saturn. I'm like, how is this possible? But it is. And like the whole purpose of me being there was for her to do that with me.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. I'm
Yeah.
curious, do you get orbs around you?
I don't see them, but when I take pictures, I do.
Well, about 2 or 3 minutes ago, I saw something from my perspective, over by the window, kind of
Okay.
between you and where the curtain is. I definitely saw something, but I don't know if there was a
Wow.
reflection. Like, I haven't seen another one. I'm like,
Okay.
are there cars going by? Is there like a reflection coming through the curtain? But there was definitely something there. So if you
Wow.
edit this or something, you
That's
can go back and
cool.
see. I know I saw it, but I would
Okay.
love to be seeing a recording and see
Yeah.
if it got captured in the recording or.
That's awesome. That's definitely confirmation, because like I get it in my sessions, because the animals come through and talk to me when I'm doing the sessions, and it's really fascinating. And so getting back to this state of that interdependence with the animals and informing that through meditation.
I love that. I mean, and that's so powerful. And I love that you get that on the more domestic animal side. And then, but it extends to animals in farming, animal husbandry, animals in the wild. And animals can be such an amazing communication device for us. Even if we don't have a personal connection. You know, I was just driving a couple of weeks ago, and I was listening to a webinar where a woman was, she was talking, she gets information from Arcturus. And so she's not completely channeling, but like not channeling, but okay. It was really powerful. And it was like three different times the electronics in my car went out, which never happens, just for like a second, not enough to make me need to pull over or anything, but it would be this crazy loud noise coming through the speakers, and then everything would go dark, and then it'd power back up and my heat went on high and all this. It was really interesting. But there was a bald eagle. I saw it in the distance and I'm like, that is not a hawk, because I see a lot of hawks. And mm-hmm. I'm like, that's not a hawk, but it's huge. It's bigger and hawks don't fly like that. I'm like, that could be an eagle. And as I got closer, I could see it was a bald eagle. And by the time I caught up to it, it was like going directly above my car. I mean, not like right above my car.
Right,
it was
right, right.
Up high in the sky. But I kept waiting for it to like shoot off in one direction or another. I'm like, oh my God, it's right above me. And it was just a really another like kind of special thing in the moment,
mm-hmm.
And a tool of the divine.
Right.
So it's amazing that we can have these like personal connections with specific animals, and then also like just how they can be a bigger, you know, how nature can be a bigger mm-hmm. part of our experience, even in like just momentary ways. It's incredible.
I had last year, I was driving, I was living down in Weed, California, and we had a snowstorm. So I went the long way to the highway because it was safer and it was plowed and flat. And I drive under a telephone pole. And as I'm coming towards the telephone pole, I see one bald eagle land, and then I see another one. And I slow down, like I'm practically stopped, and I look up and they're making eye contact with me. I cried. I was so, I've never made eye contact with an eagle. And two, I was like,
wow,
that's
so special.
It was so amazing. And like, whether or not there was a spiritual message or not, the act of it was spiritual.
Yes. Right. The effect.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. That's so beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, love animals. How special that you connect with them and communicate with them. And
yeah,
I know that my cat, you mentioned about that cat working with you with the Saturn stuff. I know that there have been a few times, and it doesn't happen all the time, which kind of makes the rare times that it happens even more special, but like where my cat will be sitting with me and looking above my head, you know, and I'm like, what is she looking at? You know, but it's like right above my head. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have mystical experiences sometimes, like before I fall asleep, where I will, they're kind of like shamanic journeys type of thing, you know, where I'm not asleep yet, but I'm seeing visions and receiving intel and things like that. And several times when I've been in that heightened state, because it's like we know what's going on inside, right? But like anybody looking at us, just a regular being, wouldn't know,
right.
You know, what that we're seeing something that we don't normally see. And we're like understanding things in a way that we've never understood things, and that things are layered, and you can understand it, like how it works in the physical, and then how it works like in the emotional realm, and how it works with other lives and other, you know, all of that. And it all comes together all at once. And it's amazing.
Yeah.
But so many times my cat will come, the other cat, River, and she'll like open her mouth and dig her mouth and her nose in up at my crown, like right at the top of my head. This has happened so many times, and only in those states. She does not do this at other times. So it's like, what is she doing? Like it's so specific.
Yeah.
And I don't have it. I don't know why she wants to brood around there. Like I'm like, is she helping to open something up? Or I don't know, but it's very interesting, and I love it. I'm like,
it
yeah,
feels
help
like
me.
She's like holding the space open for you.
That could be.
Yeah.
Especially with how her mouth is open. You know how, like, if they're really sniffing something, or how they'll like open their mouths a little bit, and it's like they're sniffing also with their tongue.
Mm-hmm.
There's that, like, whenever she finishes and she pulls away, she's always like, you know, with her mouth open. So that, you know, I mean, just literally the mouth being open and you saying it's like she's opening, helping to open space. And that very well could be. Yeah.
That's so amazing.
They're incredible.
Oh man, that's so beautiful.
Yeah.
Just feeling that, because it just feels so amazing to be able to receive the connection with our four legged feathers and fins.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the part of my soul that's Native American. It informs me tremendously, especially when I'm in contact with a tribe. I feel something shift in me, like I'm remembering something. And I was up in Orcas Island last year, and I came in contact with the Salish tribe, who were canoeing around the islands, which is magical. It's like one of the things that they do with the teenagers, the young braves, is they have to canoe on the ocean around the islands. And so when I tuned into their energy, I felt a shift in my awareness of like the interconnectivity of all of life, as opposed to me being separate from it. And when we had a potluck, when they came onto shore, and there was talking, and I was guided to stand near a redwood tree, and the redwood tree pulled me back like this, and I stood on my tippy toes to like balance, and that tree started talking to me.
Wow.
Because of the presence of the tribe, like it opened the field for me to be able to experience it. And then I think it was the next day, we went up to Mount Constitution and we did a group meditation. I've never meditated with a tribe before. So it was only like a 10-minute meditation, and we just tune in, and I'm feeling the energy. And I hear Mary Magdalene's daughter, Sarah Tamara, come into my field for the first time I've ever experienced it. And so it was like, this is a different dynamic. Like I'm getting a deeper level of connectivity because of this energy field I'm part of.
Wow.
Yeah.
How amazing. So is this part of your ancestral lineage?
Nope. Soul.
Okay.
It's soul.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm Northern white European. So it's really interesting that my soul is like, yeah, that's what you think.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious about that, because I don't know of any Native American lineage that I have physically or ancestrally, but I feel strong connection at the soul level as well. And I have had rather recently, like this, in a meditation where I felt that there was this, adolescent Native American. And at first I thought it was a girl. And then I was like, actually it might be like a feminine boy. I think it was a feminine adolescent boy, but they were in a dancing ceremony. And to the extent that I started like hearing the beat, and like in the meditation, I was even like moving to the beat, but I could like sense them stomping and how like the rhythm of how they were stomping, and that they were doing it in this specific kind of circle, like as a group. But this one particular adolescent seemed to have like all of my attention, and it was kind of an inside outside type of Like I was sort of like seeing it through their perspective, but also seeing from the outside. But I felt that the whole purpose of the ceremony was for them to be able to reach out to other aspects of them across time. And that was like, they were intentionally doing that to connect and to bless. And so it was really, really special to kind of have that. And but you know, it's one of those things, like it's so internal, like this was my understanding of what was happening. So, you know, was I 100% right? I don't know. It was just, that's what was coming through for me. That's what made sense. And that's kind of the yes that I got, but it was really beautiful and powerful. And it was one of those sort of like highlight experiences where like that has really stuck with me, and just kind of feeling the movement and hearing the beat and understanding the intention and feeling it on this side, you know, of like, wow, you did it. You did reach across time and space and connect with me.
Yeah. That's beautiful. I've been working very, very, very slowly. So it's been 2014. So it's 10 years of me working on and off with a novel because it's channeled. And so when I channel something, I actually feel something shift in my awareness. And it's a novel about a woman in my hometown connecting with a tribe. Mm-hmm. And even though my town didn't really have any tribal members there at the time that I was born, the stories around, and I feel elements of the main character as me. Mm-hmm. So when she goes through a shift, it comes in through me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the connectivity with the land and my awareness of all of life and how we are part of it and that oneness. And it's just fascinating because it is me, but it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't quantify it because, you know, it's feeling, hearing, and sensing, and knowing. You can't quantify a knowing. And it's just so fascinating because that aspect of me is like, I won't say yearning, but really desiring to come out and express itself more fully.
Yeah. And that makes so much sense. I mean, I think for a lot of authors, they are their own muse, you know, where it's like, oh, I can base this off of lived experiences and I can take liberties because this isn't a memoir, you know, it's a novel. So, yeah, it's wonderful that you're tapping into that and experiencing that.
Well, what it feels like is I'm tapping into past lives through the process of writing. And it's like, okay, because like the whole premise was I want spiritual novels. I love novels. Mm. And so when I tuned in back in 2014, before I have the awareness as I do now, it was like, so write one. I'm like, what? Like, you love writing. Yeah, I do love writing. You love novels. Yeah. You used to do creative writing. Yeah. I got that beaten out of me when I had my PhD. Yeah, but you love creative writing. Big difference. So like, it's just been like this, okay, like learn from other authors because like I get dialogue really well. Don't get the details. So yeah, it's just been this fascinating journey of tapping into my other selves that are manifesting through me to bring more completeness into me in this iteration. Yeah. I don't know. It's really fascinating.
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah. What a gift.
Yeah. So what are ways that you're feeling yourself expand through your, not just the meditation, but that connectivity with source?
I mean, that's a great question and gets to the heart of it, right? Because it's like the meditation practice is foundational and fundamental. But it's really about that embodiment of light and divinity. And meditation at this point, it's like meditation is, like I was saying in the beginning, that's kind of the tool to help me to do that. And you know, one of the things that I feel like people often think is, when it comes to meditation, like, oh, I've graduated out of meditation, or that was something that I did in the beginning, and now I'm so tuned in that I don't have to do it anymore. And so I like to take the opportunity to encourage people to consider things like meditation, or things that they maybe were doing at the beginning of their journey that they maybe felt that they evolved out of, is that there are a lot of foundational practices that's different than being beginner mm-hmm. practices.
Mm-hmm.
So there may be things that people who are on the first steps of their journey need to do, or that can help, not need to, but that can help them in those beginning stages that they don't need, you know, like training wheels.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't consider meditation for anybody to be training wheels.
No.
It is the foundation. It is the practice that we continue to do
mm-hmm.
in order to keep going deeper and to keep that connection strong. And so I think that's like this thing that we tell ourselves, either out of convenience, because it, you know, do we have time to meditate every day? We don't need a gazillion hours a day
right.
to meditate, but that practice of choosing, this is the time I'm going to spend on my connection to mm-hmm. my higher self, the connection to the divine. I'm going to do this every day. I'm going to dedicate myself to it. And again, doesn't have to be even an hour, doesn't even have to be a right. half an hour, but to say, this is a priority for me. And it's not like an on-off switch
mm-hmm.
where like, oh, I didn't do it today, so I turned it off and now I'll notice a huge difference. It's like, no, you can build up and there are cumulative effects, and you may not necessarily notice if you skip a day,
mm-hmm.
but then we can get lured by that to be like, well, it didn't really matter if I didn't do it yesterday. I feel kind of the same as I did 2 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I don't need to do it today. But it's like this downward spiral,
right.
you know, where it's like,
right.
and it's sneaky because it's not all at once. It's not mm-hmm. an on off. I feel that I got a little bit, I didn't directly answer your question, and now I'm trying to
okay.
remember exactly what your question was. Do you remember?
It was something about how the meditation has deepened your connection with the divine.
Right. Yes. So meditation has been one way that that has happened, just giving myself that space and then having the intention and the focusing my attention to say, okay, I'm connecting with my soul. What does that feel like? I'm opening myself up to divinity, allow that light to pour in, and then just observing, you know, having the intention, having the kind of trust that what I'm intending is what I'm experiencing, and feeling into that. And then the more I do that in meditation, the more I can connect to it even outside of meditation,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, okay, I know what it's like when I'm connecting to my soul and when I'm not connected to my soul.
Mm-hmm.
So where am I right now? And if I'm not plugged in, okay, slip into that, you know?
Yeah.
And there are so many things that we can do even, you know, in addition to meditation. You
mm-hmm.
talked about, I think you mentioned about somatic practices, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So that's something I'm more intentionally doing, where it's like, okay, let me intentionally take time
yeah.
to move and to have intention behind that and to feel into that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little bit newer for me because I have been so much more focused on like sitting and meditating and doing
right.
it that way. But there are so many tools at our disposal.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Sound and using sound, connecting with sound is another way. We talked about animals, like that's
mm-hmm.
a big one for me, and nature. So there are a lot of entry points, even
yeah.
if we don't feel like complete resonance with breath work, for example.
Right.
You know, it's like, well, there are other aspects to the prism, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know?
No, I get that. I get that. Like somatic healing was, it came in right after I finished taking body talk classes and I started doing my own work. And at the same time, my friend Angela, who does really, really deep, incredibly deep somatic healing, started offering classes from what she had learned. And then I took a class about being a heart-based leader at the same time. So I'm learning how to get in touch with my feelings more deeply while I'm opening my heart in this course. And like so many tears in the most beautiful way, because I learned to go from, I don't want to cry, to, thank you so much for letting me cry because I can actually feel now. And for me, it was just being so sensitive that it was easier to numb out than to feel. And so to open that aspect of me up to be able to be like, no, it's actually amazing. And this morning, when I was feeling into it, it was just an aspect of me that had hidden itself like in a deep crevice somewhere. I don't even know where, but it finally showed up. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm fully present with you. You cry as long as you want. You just express yourself as much as you want. Wanted the whole day off, but you know what? It's like, it's okay because I released what needed to be released at the time. And if more wants to come out at this time, it can. And if not, it'll come out later.
I love that. I
Thank
mean,
you.
that's so important too, the shadow work, these hidden parts of us. And I mean, and you didn't say exactly shadow, but and maybe
It
you don't
was.
consider it that,
No,
but
it is. It is.
well, I feel that so many people think that our shadows are these scary things that we are not meant to engage with. And it's kind of the difference between like beings of light, beings of dark, or like the monsters within us, the demons within us, or whatever. But it's like that's not really accurate. The shadows, they can be energies that have kind of latched onto us. That is a thing too. But a more sort of grounded way to understand shadows is that they're parts of us that we just have hidden from ourselves. Like the ego has tried to protect itself and has hidden aspects of us that it thinks that we weren't ready to handle when whatever, we were wounded, we had some trauma, we were disappointed with how we acted about something, we were ashamed, we were guilty, or we felt guilty. But it's like, even though we don't want to look directly at them or the ego is trying to hide them, they're still affecting and informing our responses, our reactions more than our responses. So it's like they're still triggering us, but we just don't know why. There's something within us that gets upset out of the blue, seemingly, or can't handle people that do a certain thing, and those people are so triggering, but we don't really know the root of that. And there is something within us that's hiding that is the root of that. So it's like having that exploration. And I love how you talk about, I finally recognized this thing that had been hiding in a place I didn't even know. Of course you didn't know it was there because it was hiding. And we all have that within us. So it is this sort of, as we go on this journey and we keep taking steps, we don't need to clear everything all at once or
Yeah, that'd
all
be
at
a
the
little
beginning or whatever.
overwhelming.
Exactly. We want to respect that kind of divine timing and just the natural flow of things while also being brave and being courageous and not feeling that there are, that these things are like evil or they're, really horrible parts of us. It's like if we can change the way that we, if we can kind of soften that, we can then not be so afraid of it. And, even before we kind of see it, even if we don't know exactly what it is, but it starts to flow up, just like you were saying, I think you were talking about that before we started recording, but it's just like, it just showed up and it needed to cry. It needed to mourn or whatever it was. And I just gave it the space to do that. And it's like that without feeling that something's wrong with us or whatever story we're telling ourselves, it can just help to like reframe what we think about what we think a shadow is.
I used to turn that historian on my inner child
I
and
love that.
tried it. No, it was bad. It was bad. It
Oh,
was
okay. I thought you were
bad.
saying you were
No,
giving it like
no.
a voice,
Oh,
like, okay.
no. What I would do was I would like dig, 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 dig to find the thing And at
Oh, I
one
see.
point, my inner child said, "Stop, please stop. You're turning this woman who's been like researching for like 30 something years on a 6-year-old.
Yeah.
That's not fair." And when I heard her say that, I was like, "I'm so sorry, honey. I'm so sorry. I was trying to help. I was trying to solve the problem, right?"
Yeah.
And she was like, "Just let me feel it." I'm like, "Oh, honey, of course I will." And ever
Yeah.
since then, like I've changed the neural pathways. If something comes up, I immediately go into somatic presence. And it's been a practice. It hasn't been easy, but like now that I'm at this point where it's like, "Oh, yep, something's up. I'm just going to shut down everything else. I'm going to be present."
I love it.
Thank you.
So you mean you were more like in your left, like going left-brained about it, like
Very, very much
let's
so.
analyze all this. That's so me too. You know, that's been a part of my journey too, where it's like, okay, I've just historically, you know, through most of my life, I really valued my analytical side and my rational brain thinking. So it can be a process. I mean, I've experienced that where it's like, okay, just allow the feelings, the felt sense, the acceptance, the not having to know. But that's a huge barrier for people, and I've been like that too.
Yeah, it's what happens now is because it's still pretty active. So I'm like, okay, what bone can I throw it to like focus on something? And so it dives into quantum physics. Not
Yeah.
the calculations or anything, but the theory of it.
Yeah.
And so that makes my left brain happy while my right brain's like, no, I'm already in quantum physics. I'm good. You don't need to study it. But it's like,
Yeah.
but I want to understand it. It's like, okay, well, if you want to understand something, here you go. Go fetch.
Right.
And that's the balance, because then that part of me that's been trained, conditioned, programmed, to find answers, even though my whole dissertation was about not finding a specific answer. It soothes that part of me.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so important to find that balance and to find a way to, rather than just to try to feel like, okay, I'm going to deny this part of myself. I mean, that's such a great metaphor for the bigger part of the
Yeah.
spiritual journey, right? Where it's like, rather than trying to think that the thing that we used to do is bad or that our left brain is bad, it's like, how do we work together? That's one of the things I've been very involved in sacred geometry this year. In 2024. I mean, we're only here in February, but it was like the new year started and a light switched on, and it was like, oh, I've got to do this whenever I don't have something that's pressing, you know, it's like, ooh, what can I draw? But I was just writing about this yesterday where it's like, I love the right, like what I love, one of the things I love so much about sacred geometry is just being engaged with it. You're in the flow and you're in that creative mode. You're in that right brain activity, but there's so much for the left brain to understand about how, you know, with antiquity, you know, how this was used with our ancestors and with the sages and and how it's a part of nature and how it's reflected in nature. Like there's just so much in terms of the math, the, you know, phi, the golden ratio, the Fibonacci, all of these things are like, you know, the knowledge of what's underneath it, but then there's just the experience of it, that it's like just doing it and allowing it to keep me present and allowing it to like just work its magic on my consciousness, where I don't have to try to con make connections. It's just happening through the practice. But it's that balance. It's like that to me is such a beautiful example of a holistic exercise of like, we're multi-layered. We can think of right hemisphere, left hemisphere, but we've got so many layers to us. And so, you know, how much can be a part of the party with whatever it is we're focusing on, you know, who's invited? Let's all go.
I love that. That's such a beautiful approach to it, because like when we see the mosaic of what we are and don't judge one aspect, like, or try to figure out one aspect being better or accepted versus not accepted. It's just this whole composite of the multidimensionality that we are. And so, like, I love making sourdough bread. That's an aspect of me. I love having podcasts. That's an aspect of me. There's so many other aspects to me, and one isn't more preferred than another. It's just showing up in a different way. And so to allow myself the space to experience all of those is, that's my sense is that's how we gain the awareness of our oneness with all.
Yeah, I love it.
Thank
so
you.
well said. Yeah.
Thank you. Well, we are nearing the end of the hour, so I'm going to ask one final question, and that is, how can people find you?
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for hosting me. This has just been such a beautiful experience. I have a couple of websites. One is caragoodwin.com. So that's Cara with a K. Goodwin, everything is as it sounds, but and that's where you can find all my meditation stuff. I actually have a sacred geometry workshop series coming up.
Oh, awesome.
And just loads of things out there. And then I have my podcast called The Meditation Conversation. So I also have a website for that, themeditationconversation.com. And that's where you can find, I've got, 300 and some odd episodes out
awesome.
For that. And yeah, just that's where I am. I'm on Instagram too, Cara_Goodwin_meditation. So I'm pretty active on there.
Awesome.
And that's pretty much it. I'm kind of easy to find. So
awesome. Well, my dear, thank you so, so much for your time, your space, this beautiful conversation, and for your being on the planet this time in consciousness with me.
Thank you so much. Thank you for inviting me and for the other end of this conversation. It's been my heart is full.
Mine too. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can you help me redefine truth and preservation of our soul shine? I can feel it, yours and mine. Close your eyes and witness it inside. In your bones, you will know. Trust and let go. And let it flow.